Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
There are children in the morning, they are leaning out for love. They will lean that way forever while Suzanne holds the mirror. And you want to travel with her, and you want to travel blind, and you know you can trust her. For she's touched your perfect body with her mind.
Ooh, on any time of the day, but on a Thursday morning, Suzanne by Leonard Cohen. It's about Leonard Cohen we're speaking next. Leonard Cohen, the mystical roots of genius, the singer and poet. Leonard Cohen was deeply learned in Judaism and Christianity, spiritual traditions that underpinned his self-identity and the way he made sense of the world. In this new book, Harry Friedman explains, puts in context, puts in a setting, does to say that Harry joins us live on the line now from the UK. Good morning to you, Harry.
Good morning, Charles. Thank you for inviting me.
Pleasure is all mine. I mean, Cohen is just, whenever I put something about Leonard Cohen up on the social medias, people say, we're dropping everything. We're going to come and listen to the interview because he has just, he's touched so many people with the words. He is a poet. He is, you know, you could almost say he's a mystic in the way that he approaches his writing. And his life was a bit of continuation of that.
He is a mystic. I mean, I think that's a really good word to describe him. There's a magnetism about him. There's something about Leonard Cohen that just draws you to his words. Even in the early days when people didn't really know what he was singing about and a lot of people thought he was too miserable, there was just something which, you know, you still had to have an opinion about Leonard Cohen. He wasn't somebody you could ignore. And his words are so powerful. And I think what's really interesting about Leonard Cohen is the way in which he takes things we know about biblical verses or verses from Lorca, who's his great Spanish, the poet in Spain, who is his great hero. And he builds stories out of them and he gives you new insights and just throws phrases at you and makes you stop and think that's not quite what the phrase was when it was in the Bible or in Lorca or wherever I saw it. But he's done something with this and he's making me think. And I just think he had an astonishing command of language and an astonishing spiritual insight.
So tell us about so many people perhaps came to Leonard Cohen on the back of Hallelujah. I mean, the versions that were done by Jeff Buckley and the version that was absolutely Hollywoodized by whoever the singer was, and get completely you can put any end of the stick. You can put any end of the stick to a song that you want. But give us the sort of the background where Cohen comes from, his, you know, his starting and his spirituality. Where does it come from?
Okay, so I mean, first of all, I should say that Hallelujah took him 5 years to write, and he discarded hundreds or dozens of verses as he wrote it. So the various versions are all different examples of how he wrote it. But where he's coming from in this, he starts with, "I heard there was a secret chord which David played, which pleased the Lord." He's basing this on a Jewish folklore, which occurs in the Talmud, where King David is asleep in his bed and the wind blows and it plays, he's got a harp hanging above his bed because he's a harpist, and the wind blows and it plays this harp, plays a tune in this harp, and David gets up and he starts praying and studying. And this is the chord which pleases the Lord. But what I think one has to understand about King David and then the Cohen is, I think Cohen sees himself in King David, because like King David, Cohen is a musician. He plays a stringed instrument. David played a lyre. Cohen plays the guitar. He's a poet. David tradition, according to tradition, writes the Psalms. He's a lover. Cohen has many loves, and King David has many loves. The only place where Cohen and David differ is in war. David is a warrior, and Cohen is not. But Cohen had a passion for war, and it's very strange aspect of his personality. His father was badly injured in the First World War, and Cohen always had this sense that war was the place where people perform at their best, where you can't possibly let your comrade down. War draws the very best, the most important things out of people, which I think is quite an interesting perspective. I wouldn't say he was pro-war, but he went to Cuba during the missile crisis in the early 60s to experience this atmosphere of war. So King David is in his bed. He's playing this. The wind plays a secret chord. It pleases the Lord. And the song then goes into various aspects of Jewish and Christian folklore, which are based around King David. So the next verse is, Your faith was strong. You needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Now, this is the story of David and Bathsheba. She is she's a married woman. He sees her from afar having a bath, presumably in the open air. He orders his servants to go and get her. He makes love to her. She becomes pregnant. He has to deal with it. And the way he deals with it in the most dreadful way is he sends her husband into battle, into the front line, and he gets killed. So why is Cohen singing about that? It's in the first line. Your faith was strong. You needed proof. And in the Talmud, the Talmud is the book of Jewish sort of lore and folklore and all sorts of things. Very, very, very big, dense book. The story is told that David asks God to prove him. David says, you are the God of Abraham, you're the God of Isaac. Why are you not the God of David? Prove me, and I'll show you what I'm made of. So God says, right, I'll prove you. And he proves him with the one thing where he knows David is weakest. He proves him with a woman. And of course, David fails the test because he commits adultery and he kills her husband. So is this an insight into Cohen? I don't know. But it's, he's drawing on these legends. And he then goes into, she tied you to the kitchen chair. She broke your throne. She cut your hair. This is Samson. So he's drawing the legend of Samson. And all the way through, he's drawing on these biblical legends. But then we get the final verse, the refrain, really, the holy and the broken hallelujah. And what he's talking about there is the idea of words. Hallelujah is a holy word because it occurs in the Psalms and occurs in prayers. But it's also broken because people are broken. And words can be used for holy purposes, for prayer or for encouraging people, for good things. And they can also be used for abuse. They can be used, words can really damage people. You can abuse somebody in such a way that you can permanently scar them if you're horrible enough. And I think the whole song is really about the power of words, and the holy and the broken hallelujah is where it comes from. It's complicated. Everything with Cohen is complicated. And I wouldn't say that we should interpret his music, but I think that is one way of looking at it.
But the other thing is the fact that he is, if you like, he's dropping. It's a musical short. It's a poetic or it's a mystic shorthand. So therefore, he is not expecting, but he is assuming that his listeners have got a certain degree of maybe they will understand where you're coming from with stuff like that.
I think so, but you don't have to understand it. You don't have to see it like that, because I think equally the words are just engaging. It's a song. It's a song, and you can sing it. And I think perhaps that comes across even more than Hallelujah in Suzanne.
Yeah.
Suzanne is a love song. What's it really about? It's really about a church on the harbour in Montreal. The Lady of the Harbour, who's the statue of Mary looking out, it's the sailors' church. It's where the sailors would used to go to pray before they set off on their voyages. And all the way through the song, he's singing about the church, and the sun pours down like honey. He's singing about the church. And yet, if you don't know that and you listen to it, it's a beautiful love song. So, you know, he has this ability to both give you a deep message and at the same time just sing a nice song which people will want to listen to. I think that's one of his great strengths.
Did Cohen actually discuss his religious education and B, his spiritual view of the world? Because, I mean, these days we can't get away from people saying, I believe in this and I believe in that. I mean, was Cohen a bit more subtle? I mean, okay, the thought of Leonard Cohen on TikTok would be quite something, but did he talk in interviews about, you know, his faith or his background or his spirituality perhaps?
Well, he did a bit, but I think more than his talking was his actions, because he spent a lot of his life in the Buddhist monastery in California, on Mount Baldy in California, with his teacher Roshi, and he was ordained as a Buddhist monk. So I think, yes, he did talk a little bit about spirituality, and he gave some engaging comments. But I think the real way one views Cohen's spirituality is to think, this is a man who is a rock star. He's, you know, he could be living the great rock star life, and in some ways he did. But equally, he retreats, and towards the end of his life, he spends several years in the monastery, cut off from the world. And that's actually some bad things happen to him then, because he's cut off from the world. But that's, you know, he's a deeply spiritual person, and he's not just interested in Buddhism or Judaism or Christianity. He also is interested in Scientology. He's interested in Hindu meditations. He said there is not a faith in the world which he was not drawn to.
I mean, he spent an awful lot of time, memorably, of course, he spends time in Greece, isn't he, on the islands, and that is tapping into that mythology, and that's spiritual.
Yeah, absolutely. So he gets a travel grant or a grant to come to London to write a book. And in London, he finds it grey and dark and miserable. And somebody says to him, my mother's got a house in Hydra in Greece. Why don't you go there? And he goes there and he spends some years there. And that's where he meets Marianne. And that's his first great love. So, yes, he taps into all these different mythologies and all these different cultures.
The book. What was the thing that set you off down this particular path with Cohen?
It was, you know, sometimes you write books because you struggle to find something to write about. This one, I was driving in the car and Hallelujah came on the radio, and I heard the first line. I heard there was a secret call which David played that pleased the Lord. I thought, I know what he's talking about. And that sort of, you know, I'd always listened to Cohen's music, but that really sparked an interest in me. And I went off and I investigated, if you like, more of his lyrics, and realized that I know about Jewish folklore, it's something I'm interested in, that I was sort of in tune with what he's singing about. And that's what gave me the idea for the book.
And I mean, again, he's writing about these subjects, but you know, in an era where, in an age when other people are writing about, I don't know, hobbits going off and dragons and people slaying things in maidens, it's quite refreshing, isn't it, to have something, and he's not in that sort of singer-songwriter, Southern Californian Laurel Caraway, which is all peace and love and I'd like to buy the world a Coke. So it is a peculiarly individual and yet universal journey that he goes on.
Absolutely, and it's a journey about the soul, and over and over again he's singing about the soul. There's he has this wonderful phrase, wonderful image in a lot of his songs about the window. He sings about windows, and what are windows? They're things which you can see through, and they're things which let the air in. But actually, they're more than that. They're boundaries. Windows are boundaries. And he sees the window as the boundary between this world and whatever is beyond this world. And so in his song, The Window, he's singing to a soul which is standing at a window, encouraging it to pass through and go on its heavenly ascent, or wherever souls go when they ascend. It's all very personal. He's talking to people. He's not making up fairy tales. He's talking to people, but he's doing it in such a sort of profound way that it really forces you to sit and think about it.
And we talk about, I said a bit about him being a bit of a mystic and going on these journeys, being in Greece and then going into the monastery and the whole thing. And then at the end of his life, he has this, if you like, this comeback, almost this like not Las Vegas, but becomes this sort of lounge. He's always had the recognition, but you see where I'm coming from. He suddenly starts appearing in these suits and being rightly feted as the grand old, slightly sort of louche man that he is.
Well, I think that's one of the remarkable aspects about him. While he's in the monastery, all his money is stolen. His manager gets into his account or has control of his account, or I don't know quite how it worked, but she siphons off all his money, and he's told this while he's in the monastery, and he's forced to go back on the road. And he's in his 70s by this time. He's forced to go back on the road, but now he's going back on the road as a 70-year-old rock star, not Mick Jagger or somebody like that who's been there the whole time, but somebody who's actually retired from the business and now got to go back and do it differently. And he's also painted all the way through his life, so he's doing exhibitions of his art, and he's traveling the world, and he travels the world for 2 years, gets into his 80s, he's still traveling, and he has this confidence about him, a confidence he never had before. And he will get down on his knees in front of his audience, and he's humble with it, because he knows what it's all about, and he's been there before, and it's just a most remarkable revival of the career. And I think that's what really made him. I think if he hadn't done this last few years, it's quite possible that although his lyrics, his music are still profound, people wouldn't have paid so much attention to him. I think it's what he did in those final couple of years which really made a difference.
Just to say that he was around, just to say, I haven't gone away yet. And when he does go away, and they always say the first great rule of comedy is timing, or the making a point is the timing, he passes away before America is made quote unquote great again.
The day before Donald Trump is elected president. I mean, what an exit. I'm not going to be here for this. I'm off.
Exactly. It sounds like this is a very thoughtful book, and one it must have been an absolute pleasure to put together.
It was lovely. It really was lovely. One of the loveliest things was just being able to go for walks with my headphones on, listening to his music and trying to understand what he's talking about, and coming home and writing it down. It was really lovely. It was really nice. I wish I'd met him, but
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, is that you always discover a little too late. It's always when you think, it would have been great to meet them. What do you hope that people, the uninitiated and perhaps even the initiated, will learn from the book?
I think to appreciate that Leonard Cohen is more than just another rock star. I think if you're not a Cohen fan, and you just you like Suzanne, you like Hallelujah, these are nice catchy songs, there's more. Just to understand, there's more to it than that. And I think for people who are Cohen fans, just to give them another perspective. I think everybody who is a real Cohen fan has got their own perspective anyway. But there are many ways of understanding Cohen's music, and I've just taken one. I've just looked at his spiritual sources. But there are many, many ways of interpreting him. And I hope I've just given people another way of looking at him.
You have indeed. The book is called Leonard Cohen: The Mystical Roots of Genius. It's by Harry Friedman, who is speaking today. Harry, if people want to continue the conversation or want to check out what you're doing, do you have an internet presence? Can people find you online?
Well, you can find me online on Facebook, Harry Friedman Books. You can find my website, harryfriedmanbooks.com. And I write every week. I write articles on history, cultural and Jewish history on Substack. So I'm around. I'm there.
Well, listen, it's been absolutely wonderful to speak to you. I think we should play out with Hallelujah, because now a lot of people will be thinking, that's what it means. Harry Friedman, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Giles, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, lift the baffled king composing Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.